Chapter 14. To me? She interrupted with a suppressed fire, of which either love or anger seemed an equally possible issue. Do you love me now? Who can say? Tell me, I will know it. I do, and I do not, said he mischievously. Hades, I have my times and my seasons. One moment you are too tall, another moment you are too do nothing, another too melancholy, another too dark, another I don't know what, except that you are not the whole world to me, that you used to be, my dear. But you are a pleasant lady to know, and nice to meet, and I dare say as sweet as ever almost. Eustacia was silent, and she turned from him, till she said, in a voice of suspended mightiness, I am for a walk, and this is my way. Well, I can do worse than follow you. You know you can't do otherwise, for all your moods and changes, she answered defiantly. Eh, what you will, try as you may, keep away from me all that you can, you will never forget me. You will love me all your life long. You would jump to marry me. So I would, said Wildev. Such strange thoughts as I've had from time to time, Eustacia, and they come to me this moment. You hate the heath as much as ever, that I know. I do, she murmured deeply. Tis my cross, my shame, and will be my death. I abhor it too, said he. How mournfully the wind blows round us now. She did not answer. Its tone was indeed solemn and pervasive. Compound utterances addressed themselves to their senses, and it was possible to view by ear the features of the neighborhood. Acoustic pictures were returned from the darkened scenery. They could hear where the tracts of heather began and ended, where the furze was growing stocky and tall, where it had been recently cut, in what direction the fir clump lay, and how near was the pit in which the hollies grew, for these differing features had their voices no less than their shapes and colors. God, how lonely it is, resumed Wildev. Had our picturesque ravines and mists to us who see nothing else? Why should we stay here? Will you go with me to America? I have kindred in Wisconsin. That wants consideration. It seems impossible to do well here, unless one were a wild bird or a landscape painter. Well? Give me time, she softly said, taking his hand. America is so far away. Are you going to walk with me a little way? As Eustacia uttered the latter words, she retired from the base of the barrow, and Wilda followed her, so that the red omen could hear no more. He lifted the turves and arose. Their black figures sank and disappeared from against the sky. They were as two horns which the sluggish heath had put forth from its crown, like a mollusk, and had now again drawn in. The red omen's walk across the vale, and over into the next where his cart lay, was not sprightly for a slim young fellow of 24. His spirit was perturbed to aching. The breezes that blew around his mouth in that walk carried off upon them the accents of a combination. He entered the van, where there was a fire in a stove. Without lighting his candle, he sat down at once on the three-legged stool, and pondered on what he had seen and heard touching that still loved one of his. He uttered a sound which was neither sigh nor sob, but was even more indicative than either of a troubled mind. My Tamsy, he whispered heavily. That can be done? Yes, I will see that Eustacia Vi. Then a desperate attempt at persuasion. The next morning, at the time when the height of the sun appeared very insignificant from any part of the heath as compared with the altitude of Rainbarrow, and when all the little hills in the lower levels were like an archipelago in a fog-formed Aegean, the red omen came from the bramble nook which he had adopted as his quarters, and ascended the slopes of Mistover Knap. Though these shaggy hills were apparently so solitary, several keen round eyes were always ready on such a wintry morning as this to converge upon a passerby. Feathered species sojourned here in hiding which would have created wonder if found elsewhere. A bustard haunted the spot, and not many years before this 25 might have been seen in Egdon at one time. Marsh harriers looked up from the valley by Wildev's. A cream-colored courser had used to visit this hill, a bird so rare, that not more than a dozen have ever been seen in England, But a barbarian rested neither night nor day till he had shot the African truant, and after that event cream-colored coursers thought fit to enter Egdon no more. A traveler who should walk and observe any of these visitants as Venn observed them now could feel himself to be in direct communication with regions unknown to man. Here in front of him was a wild mallard just arrived from the home of the north wind. The creature brought within him an amplitude of northern knowledge. Glacial catastrophes, snowstorm episodes, glittering auroral effects, Polaris in the zenith, Franklin underfoot, the category of his commonplaces was wonderful. But the bird, like many other philosophers, seemed as he looked at the red omen to think that a present moment of comfortable reality was worth a decade of memories. Then passed on through these towards the house of the isolated beauty who lived up among them and despised them. The day was Sunday, but as going to church, except to be married or buried, was exceptional at Egdon, this made little difference. He had determined upon the bold stroke of asking for an interview with Miss Vi, to attack her position as Thomason's rival either by art or by storm, showing there, somewhat too conspicuously, the want of gallantry characteristic of a certain astute sort of men, from clowns to kings. The great Frederick making war on the beautiful Archduchess, Napoleon refusing terms to the beautiful Queen of Prussia, were not more dead to difference of sex than the Red Omen was, in his peculiar way, in planning the displacement of Eustacia. To call at the captain's cottage was always more or less an undertaking for the inferior inhabitants. Though occasionally chatty, his moods were erratic, and nobody could be certain how he would behave at any particular moment. Eustacia was reserved, and lived very much to herself. Except the daughter of one of the cotters, who was their servant, and a lad who worked in the garden and stable, scarcely anyone but themselves ever entered the house. They were the only genteel people of the district except the Eobrites, and though far from rich, they did not feel that necessity for preserving a friendly face towards every man, bird, and beast which influenced their poorer neighbors. When the Red Omen entered the garden, the old man was looking through his glass at the stain of blue sea in the distant landscape, the little anchors on his buttons twinkling in the sun. He recognized Venn as his companion on the highway, but made no remark on that circumstance, merely saying, "Ah, Red Omen, you here? Have a glass of grog?" Venn declined, on the plea of it being too early, and stated that his business was with Miss Vi. The captain surveyed him from cap to waistcoat, and from waistcoat to leggings for a few moments, and finally asked him to go indoors. Miss Vi was not to be seen by anybody just then, and the Red Omen waited in the window bench of the kitchen, his hands hanging across his divergent knees, and his cap hanging from his hands. "I suppose the young lady is not up yet," he presently said to the servant. "Not quite yet. Folks never call upon ladies at this time of day." "Then I'll step outside," said Venn. "If she is willing to see me, will she please send out word, and I'll come in." The Red Omen left the house and loitered on the hill adjoining. A considerable time elapsed, and no request for his presence was brought. He was beginning to think that his scheme had failed, when he beheld the form of Eustacia herself coming leisurely towards him. A sense of novelty in giving audience to that singular figure had been sufficient to draw her forth. She seemed to feel, after a bare look at Diggory Venn, that the man had come on a strange errand, and that he was not so mean as he had thought him, for her close approach did not cause him to writhe uneasily, or shift his feet, or show any of those little signs which escape an ingenuous rustic at the advent of the uncommon in womankind. On his inquiring if he might have a conversation with her, she replied, "Yes, walk beside me," and continued to move on. Before they had gone far, it occurred to the perspicacious Red Omen that he would have acted more wisely by appearing less unimpressionable, and he resolved to correct the error as soon as he could find opportunity. "I have made so bold, miss, as to step across and tell you some strange news which has come to my ears about that man." "Ah, What man? He jerked his elbow to the southeast, the direction of the quiet woman. Eustacia turned quickly to him.
Oh, you mean Mr. Wildov?
Yes, there is trouble in a household on account of him, and I have come to let you know of it, because I believe you might have power to drive it away.
I? What is the trouble?
It is quite a secret. It is that he may refuse to marry Thomasin Eobright after all.
Eustacia, though set inwardly pulsing by his words, was equal to her part in such a drama as this. She replied coldly, I do not wish to listen to this, and you must not expect me to interfere.
But, miss, you will hear one word?
I cannot. I am not interested in the marriage, and even if I were, I could not compel Mr. Wildov to do my bidding.
As the only lady on the heath, I think you might, said Venn with subtle indirectness.
His is how the case stands. Mr. Wildov would marry Thomasin at once, and make all matters smooth, if so be there were not another woman in the case. This other woman is some person he has picked up with, and meets on the heath occasionally, I believe. He will never marry her, and yet through her, he may never marry the woman who loves him dearly. Now, if you, miss, who have so much sway over us menfolk, were to insist that he should treat your young neighbor Tamsin with honorable kindness, and give up the other woman, he would perhaps do it, and save her a good deal of misery.
Ah, my life, said Eustacia, with a laugh which unclosed her lips, so that the sun shone into her mouth as into a tulip, and lent it a similar scarlet fire.
Who think too much of my influence over menfolk indeed, Redelman. If I had such a power as you imagine, I would go straight, and use it for the good of anybody who has been kind to me, which Thomasin Eobright is not particularly, to my knowledge.
Can it be that you really don't know of it, how much as he had always thought of you?
I have never heard a word of it. Although we live only 2 miles apart, I have never been inside her aunt's house in my life.
The superciliousness that lurked in her manner told Venn that thus far he had utterly failed. He inwardly sighed and felt it necessary to unmask his second argument.
Well, leaving that out of the question, 'tis in your power, I assure you, Miss Vi, to do a great deal of good to another woman.
She shook her head.
Your comeliness is law with Mr. Wildov.
It is law with all men who see ye.
They say, this well-favored lady coming, what's her name?
How handsome!
Apostrophe handsomer than Thomasin Eobright, the Redelman persisted, saying to himself, God forgive a rascal for lying.
And she was handsomer, but the Redelman was far from thinking so. There was a certain obscurity in the Eustacia's beauty, and Venn's eye was not trained. In her winter dress, as now, she was like the tiger beetle, which, when observed in dull situations, seems to be of the quietest neutral color, but under a full illumination blazes with dazzling splendor.
Eustacia could not help replying, though conscious that she endangered her dignity thereby.
Any women are lovelier than Thomasin, she said, so not much attaches to that.
The Redelman suffered the wound, and went on colon. He is a man who notices the looks of women, and you could twist him to your will like with the wind, if you only had the mind.
Surely what she cannot do who has been so much with him, I cannot do living up here away from him.
Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.